Maria Areva is kind enough to join us. She is the author of her first book, Good Citizens Need Not Fear. She is going to be over at Next Chapter Books on Friday at 6 p.m. They're going to do a video online segment with her there, and you can find out more information at Next Chapter Books about that. She's kind enough to join us today. Her stories have appeared in The Atlantic, McSweeney's, Granta, The Journey Prize Stories, and Best Animated Short Stories. Elsewhere, she's won the Writers' Trust of Canada's RBC Bronwyn Wallace Award in 2018 and the National Magazine Award in 2019. And she as well writes, I'm going to hope I say this right, opera libretto? Is that how you say it, Maria?
Opera libretti, that's right. Hello.
I'm fascinated because the first thing I did was like, okay, what is that? You write the story for operas, that not the, you know, the part that goes within the operas that tells the story, correct?
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for having me, first off. But yeah, it's the text that the music is then set to.
That's phenomenal. I have to ask you, because you've been writing short stories for a while. You are definitely catching a lot of people's attention. And with your book here, you're putting in this collection here. We have 9 stories in that book. We'll talk about that in a second. But as a writer, considering you're writing something that's so melodic and it flows and there's a direction to it as you write this, Do you find that type of writing for opera helps your short story writing, or are those two different they're so different styles that they really don't cross over?
Absolutely, it does help. Once I've written a draft of a story, I'll read it out loud to myself to make sure I'm getting the rhythm of the sentences, to the best way I can, and the flow of the dialogue as well. So they definitely link up together.
And when you write your short stories, do you notice there is a melodic tone to them, that even though that they're, you know, not necessarily set to an opera, that there is a melodic nature to the way that you write?
I hope so. Yeah, I find that if I can read it out loud without stumbling on the words, then I've done something right.
I want to congratulate you on the Good Citizens Need Not Fear. This is you put these short stories together. The combined theme here is it's in Ukraine. It is pre-fall of communism, post-fall of communism, stories of change within those in that time frame. You were born in Ukraine. How old were you when you moved to Canada?
I was 7 years old.
Okay. So how much do you – I mean, obviously – It's interesting, and I know this is – it's movies, but we were watching Chernobyl, the thing on HBO, and, you know, it's interesting to watch my kids watch it, and it's like, this is what it was like? And I'm like, yeah, it kind of was. Yeah, it was different. How much of that impact of that time has carried with you? I mean, obviously, you've written some stories about it, but, you know, talk about that time a little bit, what you remember about being young there in Ukraine before you came to Vancouver.
Right. I think a lot of the memories translated over to the stories. I had a happy childhood, I would say, in the Soviet Union. I had a very, very good family. But what I do remember is a lot of the blackouts. So the electricity, when they would turn it off every evening because they were, quote unquote, saving energy. What I remember is, doing homework by candlelight, things like that. So That definitely made it into the stories. There's a story in there about two people making fur coats for the black market during these blackouts as well. So, and those were my parents. My parents, engineer and a chemist, they had to sew fur coats for the black market because their jobs weren't paying them anything anymore. So
that's, yeah. I think, one of the things that's interesting about the time was there was just a – it was to a point it was simpler. I mean, it's hard to kind of explain because it was simpler than America and it was simpler than that time, but there was a necessity, the necessity that was there, that the fact that, you know, you could have a person who was a doctor at night, but they were always looking for something to do on the side because there just wasn't the money, and the system, especially towards that end, was really starting to break.
Yes, that's right. You had plumbers who were actually professors as well. So everybody was 10 different things by the end and after the fall.
The collection of 9 interlocking short stories set in and around Ukraine village before and after the fall of Russia, with mordant dark humor, which led to an interesting term Eastern European black absurdism. I have never heard of this, but it seems like this is a trend in writing. Talk a little bit about that. That sounds – I mean, obviously there is a a bluntness to it. It's there's a darkness to the comedy that comes out of this. But everyone that I every review I've seen of your book, everyone says it's hilarious. It's absolutely a must read. Talk about integration. Is it really? Is that the best way to describe it? Is just really dark humor?
I think so. Yes, it's. I think there are some parts where readers don't know if they're supposed to read or they're supposed to laugh or cry, and I think that about sums it up. That is what it is. I would say that you know, Eastern European black humor, it's about this sort of splitting of reality or living in a dual reality when the government and the media was telling you how your life was supposed to be like, you know, like with the launching rockets and factories being built and prosperity, versus how you were actually living, right? So there was, you know, the shortages and the suffering. So it's a very disorienting thing to live in. And it can also be funny sometimes, for sure.
That's a you have to be an incredibly talented writer to pull something like that off, though, because, you know, if you are able to emotionally grab a reader and to be able to, not only unfold a happiness vibe, but as well also a sadness vibe, that's a pretty amazing technique that it can be there. Do you feel as if that's just the nature of these stories, is that there was, laughter, and that was the way you got through, because you would be crying if you weren't? I mean, is that why these stories attracted you?
Yeah, I think that, with the type of humor I have in my family, it is very dark. So I was just channeling that, I think, and that was, with the way people were living at the time, they had to find a way to laugh. It was therapeutic, and it was actually a way to survive. Mm-hmm. If you couldn't laugh at your reality, you had nothing left.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you say, it's therapeutic. Talk about it from your own perspective. I mean, did you feel as if writing these stories, they are therapeutic for yourself, that you're getting out feelings that you've either kind of ignored or been wanting to address yourself?
I think so. In a sense, yes. There was, for example, during my research, there was a human rights report that I read about the state of orphanages in the Soviet Union, and it was really tragic to read about some of these kids and about one girl in particular. Who seemed very bright, and she had a cleft palate, and because of that, she couldn't learn to speak. So she was sent to another institution that had really terrible conditions, and then she just disappears from that report. And for me, that was just so chilling to read, especially because I knew of some of these orphanages around my town. So I wrote a story to answer that question for myself. You know, what happened to this girl who disappeared from this report? I really needed to know that for myself. This is my imagined answer.
And what's the name of that story?
That's Little Rabbit.
That's the one that you, I believe, you won the award from McSweeney's, correct?
Yes. It was called Unsound at the time. Yes, okay. That's right.
When you're 7 years old, and obviously, once again, you're young, you don't know. You don't know. As you read back on this and you do this research on there, are there moments where, that's really what was going on? You realize the memories you have were candy coated because of youth, that you just didn't see the ugliness that was going on behind it.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the love of my parents really protected me from a lot of the ugliness outside of our apartment. So doing more research on, what really went on, was difficult for sure, to read about the suffering that went on.
How difficult was it for your parents to get out of there? I mean, let's face it, you've gone to possibly the polar opposite as far as experiences to Vancouver, Canada, which is one of the best towns I've ever been in. You talk about your parents leaving. Was it a difficult choice for them? Was it they quickly jumped at the opportunity?
Well, I think my parents really – so we had nothing to lose. We didn't own an apartment like – a few of our other friends did. We didn't have grandparents who were close by, where, we could get more food from them and things like that and more support. So we really had nothing to lose. So when my parents applied to emigrate, they didn't even tell their friends because they didn't think it was even possible, really. because nobody else around us really did it. So when it, you know, when the visa was approved, that was a shock. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think that we would come back, because in those times, if you left Ukraine, it almost seemed like you died, like you didn't come back, because that was a holdover from the Soviet Union. You know, if you left, you couldn't come back. So, mm-hmm. I mean, luckily we have come back many times, mm-hmm. but at the time it felt very final.
Mm-hmm. And you have been, as you mentioned, you have gone back to the Ukraine since then.
Yes, many times, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it, I imagine for your eyes, once again, being quite young, and for your parents, though, it must have been, you know, it's changed quite a bit now. I mean, is there still that fear that, you know, the holdovers from the Soviets? Obviously, there's a condition of war currently going on with Russia in Ukraine, and that dynamic. But I mean, is there still that day to day overhead of dread that's there, or is that finally eased up?
Yes, I think so. There is that dread, but I think more dangerously, there's that suspicion of the government, and that whatever government is telling you must be the opposite of what's true. And we're really seeing that during the pandemic. And because with, you know, the types of warnings that the government is trying to issue about, you know, not going outside and, you know, and washing hands, and that this pandemic is indeed real, a lot of people are saying that, well, it can't be true if the government is telling us it is, you know? So it can actually be a pretty dangerous attitude, unfortunately.
Well, they had 80 years in Ukraine. We got 3 years in the U.S. Isn't it amazing? we supersize everything real fast down here. Yes. Okay. Congratulations on the book. Once again, Citizens Need Not Fear. You are going to be over at Next Chapter Books. Well, you're not over at Next Chapter Books, but Next Chapter Books is hosting an event online with you tomorrow at 6 p.m. You can go to Next Chapter Books webpage, find out how you can get registered for that. Congratulations on this. I hope that goes very well for you. And by all means, Maria, if you have a chance to come on back when your next books come on out, because I know there's going to be more of them, by all means, please do.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Maria Reva is kind enough to join us. Once again, the book is Good Citizens Need Not Fear. The event is at Next Chapter Books tomorrow. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll talk about Wisconsin, then I'll do some dancing. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.